This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Okay, welcome to the Chelsea Fancast preview show, something that we used to do on Love Sport back in the day. And, you know, just because they're not around doesn't mean that we shouldn't be. If there's football to talk about, we should be here to do it. And I'm very settled in on a Friday evening with a nice pint of beer in front of me. And, of course, I'm joined by, actually, you know, a man that I would quite often be having a pint or three with on a Saturday. So it seems very appropriate. How are you, Martin?
I'm good, mate. How are you? Got a pint of water on me, so it's not quite the same, but there we go.
Well, that's behaviour unbecoming, I have to say, Martin.
Oh, very, yes.
Very unlike you.
I should have brought a note.
Well, you should. But it's really lovely to see you, nevertheless. We are, of course, expecting the diva that is Jonathan Kidd, but who knows where he is, but whatever. But we've got fun. We've got a lot on the show tonight. I'm really looking forward to it, actually. We're going to have a bit of a roundup of the news in a minute. And then we're going to have Liam Toomey, hopefully, with us to talk about the press conference today. And we've also hopefully got Steve Grant from Total Saints podcast on the opposition view to get Southampton's perspective on it. Because, of course, the real reason we're here is, of course, that Chelsea are playing my local team, as it happens, Southampton. A team that I hate to lose to for all the obvious reasons, having grown up down in this manner. But there you go. Let's crack on immediately. Actually, before we do that, a quick hello to everybody in Mixlr or the thousands that are in there listening to this show live. Good to have you in there. We've just come out of the international matches, Martin. With what can be described as, I think actually the Chelsea players on the whole did really, really well. I mean, I saw a bit of the Wales game. I saw a bit of the Belgium game. Do you know what? Weirdly, I forgot it was on. And would you believe I was digging in my allotment, which is not a euphemism, by the way. I really was digging in my allotment. And I came back and thought, fuck, the football's on. And I twitched it on just as Mason Mount scored a really wonderful deflected goal, which ended up being the winner against the best team in the world. So I thought Mount did okay. I thought James was superb against Denmark in a very awkward match. I applauded him wholeheartedly for gobbing off at the referee and getting a red card as well. That's what I like. Havertz and Werner both did very well. They scored goals and assisted each other. Rudiger had a shocker, apparently, although I didn't see it. And Kepa got minutes. So I think all in all, the Chelsea boys done all right.
Yeah, I must confess, I did not watch a single one of those games because, as you well know, my international team is the Republic of Ireland. So while England were playing Wales, I was watching a get knocked out of the Euro 2020 playoffs.
Of course, the Irish.
the bad luck of the Irish. I think by the end of it, we were lucky to get a team out because half our players got fucking COVID. So it was an absolute shambles of a thing. But I didn't see any of the game against Wales. I saw the last 10 minutes of the game against Belgium. I did see Mount's goal and I saw Reece James make his first start for England. So good for him. But, you know, three games behind closed doors at Wembley is just a bit rubbish, really. I'm sure they're absolutely made up with it, but I think they were perfect occasions to get fans in and it wasn't used.
Well, the arguments on that will run and run and run, won't they? I mean, the thing that really, you know, I used to be, you know, I would say quite easily as much of an England fan as I was a Chelsea fan. Kind of where I started really loving football was because of England, in a sense, before I started loving Chelsea. But I've got to be honest, mate, it just turns me cold these days. I mean, okay, you know, empty stadium and all the rest of it really, really doesn't help. And you know, we know what that's like just for the Chelsea games. But it irritates me now, and I'll tell you for why. I mean, you know, Chilwell picked up an injury. Mount, you know, had to run around and, you know, run his arse off again. Mendy's got injured. You know, Kante's taken a knock. The thing that really hits me is I really don't feel emotionally attached to it anymore, and it just seems to be far more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, well, there's always the risk of players getting injured, but... Yeah. Because now, normally it would be two games in the international period, and for reasons known only to themselves, I suspect money is involved, it's now three. Mm. So I can't remember them playing three international games in a week in the season. I'm sure the club managers aren't too happy about it, and it increases the risk of injury. I mean, the collective crying I saw when Mendy got injured wasn't a surprise, and it looks like he's out tomorrow.
He's definitely out tomorrow. Yeah.
And as well as this, with everything that's going on in the world, do you really want players that are in a fairly secure bubble at their club to prevent themselves getting the virus, going crisscrossing the globe, coming back and potentially infecting other players? I mean, I think international football should take a back seat for a good year until this mess gets sorted out, and I would have extended that to European club football as well, because if we've got players going into hotspots of coronavirus, I think it's absolute madness.
It's a really interesting point. I wasn't planning to talk about that, but actually, I think it's a really good thing to talk about because
I'm feeling because Jonathan's not here.
It's a really good point actually, and it's remiss of me not to kind of put it in the running order, because I remember us kind of whinnying on the other week on the fan cast about, well, why aren't the youth players getting a go? And of course, they're in a separate bubble. And I think that it kind of explained that away. And then you send all of our players off, you know, out of our bubble into somewhere else. And I mean, you know, Ronaldo picked up the coronavirus, didn't he? So there's no. Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure others will.
Well, like I said, with Ireland, a load of players had to. One got infected, others had to isolate, and they were all of the same club connections. So it will probably affect them, the club. I think it's Sheffield United it affects as much as anything else. They'll go back to their bubble and have to isolate if they've been in close contact with someone.
Well, they will indeed. And I think, I don't know. I mean, the cynical part of me says that maybe the clubs and those who run football are saying, oh, well, they're all fit and young. They'll all be fine. They'll just get it and they'll feel better a few days later. But
only takes one.
I was going to say, and I don't mean to be more morbid or mawkish about this, but, you know, the law of averages says that if they carry on being this lackadaisical about it, a footballer is going to die of COVID. And then what are they going to do?
Yeah, they'll probably make excuses. It doesn't even need to be a footballer. I mean, I seem to recall in the first lockdown, Sammy Abraham was one of those who publicly expressed reservations on the basis that his father was an asthmatic and he didn't want to be putting himself at risk while the virus was in high prevalence.
And there is that as well, of course. We shouldn't forget that. Well, there you go. They're all over now. But, of course, they're not all over because we're going to have to do it all again in the middle of November, which is a right pain in the arse. But the upside of that is that it means that we'll do another Q&A podcast on the Monday evening. We had a lot of fun last Monday. We had a load of Patreon members in there on the Zoom session live. It was great fun in a show that both Jonathan and I really, really enjoyed doing, actually. And Dan, I think, was in there as well. And who else was in there? Dane was in there too. We had a lot of fun. So we'll be doing that again on November the 16th. So there is an upside to the international break, so I should shut up moaning. One other thing that kind of crept up in the news, I was going to talk about Jorginho apparently after another contract.
For singing?
I think it's just gossip, so I'm going to ignore it. What I am going to talk about really did happen. And I have to say, mate, I was a bit saddened by it. Ian Mattson's gone on loan to Charlton. Now, why am I sad about it? I mean, you know, clearly you would have thought he wasn't going to play much. But I have to say, considering that our backup left-backs are Emerson and Alonso, both of whom were trying to be, you know, shifted out of the club, I would have thought, you know, it might have been an opportunity for Mattson to come in. But at least he's going to a club where they look after our Chelsea players and they'll get game time.
Absolutely. I mean, it's caught me by surprise because this morning my boss is a Charlton fan. And he just said, oh, look, he came out of the blue in a conversation. He said, our last left back we got from Chelsea did a good job. He was talking about Jay Da Silva. And then he said, oh, we've got another one. Okay, what's his name? Couldn't remember it. I've checked their squad page and there it is, big bold letters, Ian Mattson's on loan from Chelsea. I was as surprised by it as you are, but if he's getting games, it can only be better for him. But I suspect in normal times, Emerson would have been out the door. And Mattson would have been the third choice.
Indeed. Well, good luck to Ian Mattson. He played last season, didn't he? I can't remember who it was. It was Grimsby, wasn't it? And he looked.
It's Grimsby in the League Cup. I think he played in. Yeah. Did he play in the one of the? Was it when we played Everton? Or was it Angerin? I can't remember.
I think it was Angerin. But
yeah, okay.
He looked good, and I wish him well because he looks a good player. Right, we're going to have a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Liam with us, Liam Toomey from The Athletic, who is going to tell us everything that happened in the presser with Frank Lampard today. See you in a minute.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com.
Okay, welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast preview show, our little soiree on a Friday evening. What would in an ideal world would be like a pre-pub chat before we all went down the pub and got hammered, but sadly not really at the moment. I'm Stanford Chidge, of course. I've got the lovely Martin Wickham with me.
Evening. I can rest my voice now for a bit and all.
You can. You can do that because the star of the show has finally waltzed through the door, so to speak, Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Yeah, I've come in three-quarter time. Thank you. I'm sorry, Chidge. I didn't realise that I was supposed to be here at 7. I thought it was 7:10, waiting for 7:15, and I'll fit you in. I thought, oh, Chidge has got some kind of appointment, some kind of important meeting.
Yeah, it was the Chelsea fan cast, mate.
Was that 7. What it was?
Yeah,
it was
something. But hey-ho, it's good to see you.
Lovely to be here.
It's good to see you. Now, our special guest, of course, this is like a bit of a kind of a reversion of the Love Sports Show, and I'm really, really delighted because I haven't seen him for ages. He hasn't been on the show for ages, but the lovely Liam Toomey, who, of course, now writes for The Athletic. Liam, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. I'm pretty good. I've watched none of the international football.
No, you missed that bit. You're all right. Don't worry. You're safe.
I couldn't bring myself to watch it. And to be honest, I don't think international football should even be happening right now.
Well, you know what? We were kind of...
Is there an echo in here?
We were actually pretty much saying the same thing for the same reason. I have to say a couple of things before we get into the meat and potatoes of what I want to talk to you about. And first of all, you're doing some sterling work with The Athletic and some brilliant work on the Straight Outta Cobham podcast, which is a great listen. If people listen to this and they haven't listened to Liam and Dom and Simon and Matt on the Straight Outta Cobham podcast, I commend it to you. It's really good. But I need to personally thank you for doing such a fantastic piece and tribute to Andrew Woody last week, which was very heartfelt. He was a mate of many of ours, so we were very grateful for that. So thank you.
Well, I just felt that it was something that needed to be written about because I was really taken aback. I obviously didn't know him But I was really taken aback by the tributes that I saw from all of you guys and from many others. And of course, people at Chelsea as well paying tribute to Andrew Wood. And yeah, it just felt like a story that should be told.
Mm, good stuff. Well, thank you.
The gesture from the Villa players was absolutely fantastic. The Villa players doing it as well was absolutely...
Grealish and Ross Barkley.
Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah, that was a nice touch. I mean, to be frank, he deserved it. He was a lovely, lovely chap. And I've been reading CFC UK tonight, and there's, you know, equally a huge amount of tributes in there. Right. Now, today, it's Friday, Liam, which means one and one thing only. No, not Cracker Jack, for those of you who are not teenagers. No, it means the Chelsea press conference, which, of course, is done like this now, isn't it, Liam? Which must be weird for a start. I didn't see it, but I know what happened. First of all, injury updates. Mendy out, Silva out, Chilwell fit, Pulisic fit, Ziyech not fit to start. But of course, the big issue with Mendy being out is the decision on the keeper, which Frank was, he played with a rather straight bat, I think the expression is, isn't it?
Yeah, he's certainly giving himself every available out on that one. He didn't want to reveal his decision ahead of time. I think he will go with Kepa purely on the basis that Chelsea as a club are still invested in giving him every possible chance. And also because he was the goalkeeper on the bench for the last couple of games that Mendy played. But we won't know until we actually see the team line up. I just think it would be it would be another big line in the sand drawn from Lampard if he was to go with Caballero against Southampton. Given that you still kind of want to give, or Chelsea are certainly minded to give Kepa every chance to try and recover his confidence.
Mm. I mean, you know, I know it's different, you know, because you're not actually physically in the room for the press conferences these days. And I remember, Jonathan will remember this too, you know, when we used to do the Love Sports show, we always used to say, so Liam, what was the vibe, you know, in the press conference room? We can't really do that, but I'm still going to ask it. I mean, you know, tell me what you think about Frank as a manager in the context of press conferences. I always get the impression that he's a very bright guy, but he does play the game. He's not going to tell you anything that you're not going to get anything out of him necessarily. That's the impression I get.
Yeah, I'll caveat this by saying that with the job I do with The Athletic now, I'm not in every press conference like I was for ESPN. So someone like Ollie might have more insight than me on that. But okay. What I've seen from the Lampard press conferences that I've been in is that, I mean, he kind of is what he was as a player, which is someone who's been very used to being interviewed since he was a teenager. And he, you know, you can tell he's from the lineage of the Redknapps as well as the Lampards, and that he knows how the media game works. There have been a couple of times I've been in press conferences with Lampard where he's kind of said, oh, I know where that question's going, or I know what that headline's going to be. You know, he knows how the game works, and he's always been very, very good at managing how he comes across. And I think that's actually, in modern management, modern elite club management, that's a more important skill, I think, than it used to be, because now these managers... JK, what are you doing?
He looked like a monk, didn't he? Like a Cistercian monk or something.
I'm so sorry.
What are you doing?
I'm just taking my clothes off.
You're just an upstager, mate. Liam's in mid-flow and you do something...
I didn't mean to. Sorry, I didn't think I'd be distracted.
It looks like a straitjacket. Leave it there. It
bloody well ought to be.
It's just quite hot. I've had a shoulder operation, so I can't get it off properly, you see.
It's hot up in Finland, JK.
Very, very hot. Well, I'm in an igloo.
Yeah, your Aurora Borealis is showing again. Look, you interrupted a minute ago because you were going to ask something, and now you have properly. You might as well ask what you were going to ask Liam, if you see what I mean.
No, I was just going to say, let's get Ollie, I was going to say.
Jesus.
I find myself frequently saying that.
Seriously, can I ask a question? Do you think Frank's looking a bit... tense. I find Frank slightly more tense. I think just a little bit than he was, and a bit more cagey, Liam. I'm getting that feeling with him. I think he's slightly under pressure because of the completely unfair aspect of people having a go. But I find it ridiculous that, you know, none of the They do things like you see polls appearing of top purchases in the transfer window, and not a single Chelsea player's in it. I mean, I know that's probably just trolls or whatever, but nonetheless, is he? I still feel that there is that kind of hangover from Abramovich being having bankrolled us before, and people paying no attention to the fact that, you know, United pay huge amounts of money for players as well. I just feel he's a little bit less. I don't know, avuncular, wrong word, but you know, I just think he just seems slightly more
guarded.
Hence, yeah, guarded. Yeah, is that? Well,
I think he feels the pressure, and I don't mean that in the sense that he's cracking under it or anything. He does realise that this is the real Chelsea job now. You know, last year he had circumstances that made his job more complicated, but also protected him from criticism in some ways. He doesn't have that this time. Chelsea, the biggest spenders in the market in net terms. Abramovich has kind of won the transfer window for the first time in
Do we get a trophy
years,
for that,
I'd
Liam?
Say. Well, I don't
Spurs
know. We'll see.
They would.
You could
I was intrigued because of the roller coaster of this. We're suddenly linked with Haaland. Did you see that as well?
Everyone is going to be linked with Erling Haaland. Everyone.
Is he coming to the end of his contract or something? No.
He has next summer. He has a €65 million release clause,
right,
which is incredibly low for what is probably the best young striker. Well, I mean, along with Kylian Mbappe, the best young striker in the world. So he will be next summer. Him and Jadon Sancho will both be having basically their pick of elite European clubs, but Haaland, they'll probably be even more buzz about because
of
that
price.
By the way,
Sancho was terrible for England during the week, just to say. He didn't hardly got a touch. Came on a substitute, was absolutely invisible.
Glad one of us is watching.
Yeah. Well, no, I wanted to watch because I wanted to watch James and Mount, to be honest. And James was fabulous, but he wasn't doing any defending. He was just coming forward. And he was putting in these wonderful crosses, and somebody should have been on the end of them, you know. And Mount was great as well. So
Could have talked about that if you'd have been here at 7.
Oh,
but you weren't, so you can't.
I got this
We've done it.
I even answered the Alexander Gordon because Chidge read out.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I'll check that. What did you think? Did I get the job?
No.
Okay, but fuck you too.
You had a jolly good go. James Alexander
Chidge. You turned up. You know, basically, is what you say. You know,
yeah, you had a go. Well, that's good. I was like that. You know, you had a go, Chidge. Well,
I love you too. I'm going to talk to Liam about the presser. Other than the injuries, which we kind of knew about, and you know, I can understand why he's played a straight back with Kepa. But a couple of other interesting things that he mentioned. I don't know who asked the question because I didn't see it, but somebody was talking about something that's been on our minds a lot, which is we've seen some really odd results, haven't we? I mean, you know, the 7-2 Liverpool loss, obviously the one that springs to mind, 6-1 Spurs, obviously. And it was interesting what he said about that, actually, and I thought he answered that very well. Would you like to enlighten us a little bit, Liam?
Oh, well, I can tell you what I think. I'll just look up, refresh my memory as to what Lampard said.
Well, I can do that for you. I mean, basically, he was saying, you know, something that we've been saying on the show, actually, pretty much since the start of the season, that, you know, there hasn't been enough pre-season. People aren't up to speed yet, you know. New players coming in, so you are, as we all should remember, you are going to get, you know, odd results happening, and he felt it was down to that. I also happen to think, and me and the boys have talked about this on the show recently, that having no fans there is also making a big difference. If you look at the number of away wins, for example, which you might not normally get.
Yeah, I think there's a few different elements at play. I mean, pre-season is typically when coaches do all of their preparation, tactical, physical. It's where the whole foundation for a season is laid, particularly at top clubs. So much work goes into it. And there was no pre-season this year. There just wasn't. The turnaround was so short. And when you add that to the fact that Chelsea are pretty much one of the only new teams in the Premier League this season with the number of new players they've bought, and all of these players turned up at slightly different times, slightly different stages of fitness, some of them coming from other leagues, some of them coming from elsewhere in the Premier League. it's going to take time. And I think the attacking element of this is part of it as well. You know, I asked Lampard about the challenge of trying to balance everything in that attack today. And I think it's harder and it takes more time to build that kind of attacking chemistry than maybe it does to build a defensive system. Now, I know we haven't seen, I know there's recent evidence to the contrary, but you know, you can see generally in coaching, a new coach can come in and drill a defense or at least a deep lying defense quite quickly, but attacking patterns and combinations and stuff, they take a little bit longer and players often have to try and figure it out on the pitch with each other. So I think all of that goes into it. And then you add the fact there are no crowds. Every match takes place in a really surreal ghost of an atmosphere. Different players react to that in different ways. Some players feed off the crowd. Some players get themselves into a mental state where the crowd doesn't really exist for them. And some players, it really lightens the pressure on them. And I think also when you get these games where, you know, a team goes 2-3-1 down, often the crowd would get on their back and sort of facilitate a change of momentum a little bit. And because that isn't happening, they just keep conceding and end up losing 5-6-1 or 7-2.
I perversely think the referees have got better in this environment because I don't think
they're swayed by the crowd, are they?
By the crowd anymore. Yeah. No.
Liam, last thing, because I'd love to talk to you about this for about an hour, actually, but don't panic. The look you gave me then was one of horror. I'm not going to do that. Although maybe we should. It's not now, but it's such a big issue. I've not done my piece on it yet because I wanted to kind of let it digest a bit, and it's an incredibly fast-moving story. The reason I bring it in is because I know that they talked about it in the presser, and unsurprisingly, Frank was never going to say anything about it. But it's the Project Big Picture thing. So, I mean, really what I'm asking you is what you felt about what Frank had to say and what you think about it yourself, because I think have you done a piece on it this week?
I haven't, no, but at The Athletic we've written a lot about it.
Yeah.
I thought Lampard pretty much said all he could. You know, he can't really speak for Chelsea as an institution on something like this, because these discussions are happening at the very top level of all of these clubs. And I think you've seen, you know, the old saying, success has many parents, failure is an orphan. You know, as soon as it became clear this idea was dead on arrival, a lot of clubs, Chelsea included, were very, very keen to distance themselves from it, either publicly or privately. And it was very much, even Liverpool and Manchester United, you know, the clubs that were basically the architects of the plan, their owners didn't turn up to the Premier League meeting where it was comprehensively dismissed.
Wow.
Basically, as soon as it came out, it was dead immediately. But I think we discussed on our podcast about whether this kind of leads to a European Super League somewhere down the line. And I'm not necessarily convinced yet that we're on like a one track path to that, but it does seem like everything that's happening in the world and everything that's happening to the football ecosystem is speeding up the process of the top clubs wanting to grab more control and more power of the sport for themselves. I don't know whether that will eventually take the form of the European Super League or whether it'll be something else, but as a concept, that's not good for the game, because we've seen in many other areas of the world that when a group of powerful individuals or organizations seize control of an entire industry or area, they tend to make decisions and govern for their own benefit rather than the benefit of everyone. So I don't think it would be for the good of football, but it's becoming increasingly difficult, I think, to see how the mechanisms of football can stop it happening.
Mm. I mean, you know, like I said, Liam, we could do an hour on this, and maybe we should one day. But I think the most immediate likelihood is that, particularly if we got fans staying out of the stadiums for a while, is that you'll end up with pay per view per club. I think that'll be the first thing. But I do think, I mean, you know, I've been writing about this, talking about this for 15-20 years, you know, I will be amazed if there isn't a European Super League in my lifetime, because they want it and they have the power. But there you go. Liam, as always, you're an absolute delight. It's lovely to see you, mate. Hopefully we'll get you back on soon on the Friday night, maybe even the Monday night. But I know you're so busy with your own podcast now. What can I say?
Well, we don't record on Monday night, so I'm sure we'll be able to find the time.
Good, man. It'd be lovely to. I owe everybody a schedule before they remind me. I know I do, but I'll get it out soon. Liam, good to see you, mate. We'll see you again soon. Thanks so much, mate. Right, we're going to be back in a minute. And
apologise to Liam briefly.
You're going to apologise to him?
Yeah, to Liam, because about Chilwell, I apologise.
Oh, yes. Yes.
However, that was when he was going for 80 million, and I said he would never go for that. He'd be worth 50. That was my caveat.
Liam's only taking them and writing these days, JK. Anyway, look, we've got to go for a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to have our lovely opposition view. And this week we've got Steve Grant from the Total Saints podcast, because of course we're playing Southampton tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. We'll see you in a sec.
Chidge.
JK, in all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep. NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. And where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Proper Chelsea.
Footballfancast.com.
Right, welcome back to Chelsea Fancast preview show on a Friday night, live and direct on Mixlr, of course, for those that know. This is time for what we like to call this.
The Opposition View.
Right, and we've got Steve Grant from the Total Saints podcast, because we're playing Southampton tomorrow, which, of course, well, Steve probably won't know this, but I am currently in Winchester, so they are technically my local team, right? So, but don't have a go at me. I lived in London for 30 years. What can I say? But I mean, most of my school friends are Southampton fans, Steve. So this is a bit weird for me. I mean, what can I say?
Well, we've kind of swapped because I'm actually in Croydon.
So. Well, there you go. Fair enough. It's a bit like
that's not London. It's Surrey.
Oh yeah. Well, don't get technical. But that's
see what the lockdown status says.
That's a bit like the Houses of Parliament when MPs pair up because they want to piss off down the pub rather than vote. So we've kind of cancelled each other out. I like that. Right, we got you lot tomorrow. Your form, it's been interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, how on earth did you lose 5-2 to Spurs, first of all? But
we managed to give Sun Heung-min the same goal 4 times.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just an extraordinary spell of non-defending where we basically just played directly into their hands, really. Just got everything completely wrong for 45 minutes in that game. Because we were well on top at half time. Should have been 2 or 3 clear. And then all of a sudden, they equalised right on the stroke of half time, and we just kind of collapsed in a bit of a heap in the second half.
But I mean, that is a bit of an outlier. I mean, I know you lost 1-0 to Palace first up, but I mean, the last couple of games have been all right. You've beaten Burnley away, which is no. I mean, that's not easy, really.
People we've got a terrible record up there as well.
Well, a lot of people have. They're not easy on their own patch. And I mean, West Brom. I mean, we you know. Obviously, we drew 3-3 with them, so they're clearly one of the best teams in the league. You know, so for you to beat West Brom was a good result. I mean, I get the sense that things are picking up for Saints, and obviously Danny Ings has been front and centre of that, hasn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've got to still credit everybody else because without the work that he does, without the work that they do, he would really struggle because you've got to get the service. I mean, you can't. I mean, he's not Lionel Messi. He's not Cristiano Ronaldo. He's not producing goals for himself. It's all a big team effort. But ultimately, he's the one that's in front of goal to take them all. And
you're underestimating him. I think I think he's terrific. I think his positional play, his ability to sniff out goals, is absolutely fantastic.
Scored for England in the week.
Yeah, in situations where you know you don't, he sort of lingers a bit on the edge of the area and then moves around. I think he'd get goals even with bad service.
His running style is fascinating because last season I think he scored 3 goals as a direct result of chasing down the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And basically, like when the opposition's kind of passing it around the back and it ends up back at the keeper, quite often they can kind of get lulled into a false sense of security because he's kind of ambling around and then all of a sudden he'll just break on them. And they don't.
Samuel Eto'o used to do that. Eto'o used to score goals by even standing behind the goalkeeper and waiting for the goalkeeper to put the ball down. And then he'd turn and he'd come and kick the ball away. And it was perfectly legitimate just because the goalkeeper had fallen asleep for a bit, you know. But no, I'm a big fan of Ings. Forgive me.
I've got to be honest. Yeah, I am too.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I am too, you know.
Considering the injuries he came back from as well.
Yeah, exactly, Martin. Yeah, I was going to say that. But there's another reason why I'm a big fan of Danny Ings. He's the third most famous person born in Winchester after me and Wayne Bridge. So, you know, he's all right. Yes. He's all right. But anyway, we digress. I want to talk to you about Hasenhüttl, but I'm going to wait for a minute because we are talking about the players. Obviously, you know, we've got two former Chelsea players there in Oriol Romeu and Ryan Like a Lion against Bayern Bertrand, who Chelsea fans have, as these boys will tell you, that a huge affection for Ryan Bertrand, or Rion Bertrand, as we used to call him back in the day. I actually quite like Oriol Romeu too. I mean, I had this spate, Steve, where I would get asked to, usually by some brand or something, I would go and get to interview a player at Chelsea, and then weirdly, about a week later, they'd be sold. So I'm not welcome at Cobham anymore. Unless they want to get rid of somebody like Emerson, I'm happily interview him. Obviously, how have they done at Southampton? I mean, you know, what's your view of them as players?
I mean, Bertrand's been superb from the moment he arrived, and it's very strange because he, despite the fact that he's clearly one of our better players and just the maturity that he shows on and off the pitch should be an inspiration to basically any young player. He seems to be relatively underrated among the fan base, which seems, I mean, it's always baffled me that, but I think the fullback position has been so important for us that we kind of almost take it for granted now. And yet you kind of look at the players that we've had on the opposite flank in the same period and none of them have been anywhere near to his level. And yet they've kind of take Cedric as a prime example. He's now somehow got a 4-year deal at Arsenal.
When the guy could barely get that surprised me a few weeks back as well. Saw him in an Arsenal shirt and just thought he was another player.
But I mean that was an agent link. That was Kia Jurabchin having far too much of an influence. Yeah,
lovely man.
Yeah, but no, Bertrand's been absolutely superb. After Ings, I would say he's the second name on the team sheet
really?
For me. Romeo's been a little bit more up and down, but I think a lot of that is the position that he plays and the system that we play means that naturally his influence is going to vary quite a lot. He's very good against the better teams, I find, because he's good at breaking up the play, particularly good at those sort of snidey, niggly little fouls that you don't tend to get booked for, but you can get away with making sort of two or three of them in the centre circle during a game, and it will just irritate the hell out of the opposition. So I'd fully expect to see at least a couple of those tomorrow.
He scored a cracking goal, didn't he? Was that against West Brom?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, I think he was probably more surprised by that than anybody else. I'm sure I saw somewhere that was his. I mean, it was certainly his first goal in about 50 games, and I think his first touch in the opposition box since January.
It sounds like the Oriel remote.
He's not in the team for his goal scoring, no. But it's interesting actually that I think had the Pierre Højbjerg situation not kind of escalated around Christmas time, where rumours started coming out that he was looking to move on. I think, to be honest, we'd have been concentrating our efforts on finding an upgrade for Romeo. But as it turns out, obviously he stayed. We had to get a replacement for Højbjerg, and we've got Ibrahima Diallo in from Brest, who's a French under 21 international. So we've kind of filled that hole, but I think as a result of that, Romeo has kind of probably felt his position slightly reinforced, because it's likely to be him and Ward-Prowse in the centre of midfield.
Who's a good player?
Ward-Prowse has come on a lot in the last probably 18 months or so, but he does have this habit of having sort of spells of two or three months where he looks excellent. And then I don't know whether he takes his eye off the ball or kind of just relapses into a few old habits. So, and he's not started this season superbly. So I'm kind of hoping that the international break, he's kind of had sort of things put into his head that kind of give him a bit more focus going forward for the rest of the season.
What about Walcott, Steve? I mean, he's turned up from Everton. He's gone back to where he started his career. I mean, how do you feel about that?
When it was first mooted, I kind of thought, well, that's completely not the sort of signing we make. He's on big wages. He's got a checkered injury record and hasn't really been playing an awful lot in the last two years or so. But you kind of listen to the enthusiasm that he's got for coming back to us, and the fact that Everton are paying the majority of his wages. So the financial outlay isn't sort of obscene from our perspective. We've not had to pay a loan fee. So financially it works quite well for us. He's out of contract in the summer. So it's a possibility that he's either putting himself in, if he puts himself in the shop window for other teams, that means he's done well. Or alternatively, he just says, "Well, okay, I'm quite happy to stay here if the terms are right." So I think it's a signing that makes an awful lot of sense, other than the fact that he's the wrong side of 30, which, as I say, is kind of just completely not what we do. So it's quite unusual in that respect.
Mm. So tomorrow, I mean, I'm just looking down, you know, at the list. We actually lost to you last year. Our last game against you at home, we lost 2-0. I've managed to erase that from my memory bank for some reason.
Because the last time I done one of these previous shows, I highlighted Irish international strikers who only score against Chelsea in the Premier League. So in the habit of David McGoldrick, Callum Robinson, I'd like to bring to the table Michael Obafemi. That's not Obafemi either.
Yeah.
Just trying to think whether Shane Long scored against you as well, because
I'm sure he has.
No, Redmond scored, didn't he? I think we get.
Redmond and Obafemi.
Redmond got the second one.
We passed it to him or something. I can't remember. As I said, it's funny how I. That would have been on Boxing Day, wouldn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, which I have a habit of. I had to move out of London a couple of years ago, and that's kind of put the kibosh on a Boxing Day match for me. So there we go. So I wasn't there, but I do remember. I have a horrible memory of it anyway. But anyway, this is a different year, isn't it, Steve? How do you see it going? I mean, let's face it, you're only a point behind us. So, you know,
It's an interesting one. I mean, I think I've been very surprised by your transfer dealings in the summer, because it was painfully obvious to basically anybody watching that your problem last season was your defence.
No, really?
Going forward, you've been fine. And yet, in the close season, it's, oh, we're just going to spend all the money on signing all of the sort of high profile attacking players for massive money. I mean, obviously, you've then since gone and got Chilwell and
Silva,
Thiago Silva. Mm. But it does seem as if Lampard's kind of, I mean, if it works out in a sort of Keegan-esque, we'll score one more than you system, then I think neutrals will actually quite enjoy it, because it'll be really entertaining. But I can't help but think that if you want to win anything, you've got to have a much better defence than you showed last season. And I mean, the West Brom game kind of showed that it's not really improved yet. Mm. But I think in terms of the way we'll set up, I think we'll play the way that we usually do at Chelsea, and that we'll probably look to sit deep and hit you on the counter attack. I mean, it worked absolutely perfectly last season. I mean, in truth, we probably should have won by more than the 2-0, the way that game went. But I think it's one of those games where all three results are up in the air. I think, I mean, you'll be favourites, obviously, with the attacking spoils that you've got, and the fact that our defence is somehow worse than yours. But I think there's a possibility there that a lot of your players come back from international duty, having played three games in the space of a week, and are possibly a little bit jaded.
Yeah.
We've only had, I think, obviously Ings played the Wales game, but he didn't come off the bench in either of the two competitive games. Ward-Prowse, likewise. So we've not really had too much exertion this week. So other than one injury and one illness, we're pretty much at full strength.
So does
ever change the two banks of four and then press? I can't remember. I can't work out what tactically happens. Does he change?
Yeah, we play quite narrow. It's a very narrow sort of equivalent of 4-4-2. So it's effectively a 4-2-2-2. So you have the two holding midfielders sitting in front of the back four, and then the two slightly more advanced midfielders, which I would imagine tomorrow will be Nathan Redmond and, I mean, it's probably going to be Theo Walcott, because the other two options are both unavailable. And what they will do is they will play quite narrow when we have the ball, which means that the fullbacks are quite important. They'll overlap a lot. But defensively, it then becomes at least a four, sort of a bank of four in midfield, and then either Ings or whoever he's up front alongside, probably going to be Che Adams, I would imagine, will then also sit in, probably in a kind of almost in a sort of withdrawn number 10 role, I guess, when we don't have the ball.
Yeah, no, I was just intrigued by the going back to the Spurs game, is that it appeared to be just long balls that were your undoing, which Song is such a good player at dealing with that.
Yeah.
So it was obviously you were attacking quite high up the pitch, and it was slightly goes counter to what you're saying about them essentially being in the two banks of four and then moving forward.
I think
you do push up occasionally, don't you?
It depends on whereabouts on the pitch. I think when the ball's in the opposition third, we will push up high. And you'll kind of have a swarm on both the goalkeeper and the back four.
Yeah.
But what I think the one thing that we did against Spurs that kind of shot ourselves in the foot was that the press was kind of a lazy press. And so kind of, it wasn't everybody doing sort
the
of
same thing. Yeah,
the full job that they needed to do sort of as one group. It was kind of, one player would press and one was kind of not quite there. And as a result, it then meant that Spurs were able to basically ping the ball over the top quite easily. Mm-hmm. Whereas in other games where we've done it successfully, you basically just suffocate the opposition, turn the ball over in their half.
Yeah.
I'm sure I saw a stat that our games last season contained the most ball turnovers for both sides.
But I think
so basically we're rubbish at keeping possession.
I'm a fan of Redmond. I think Redmond's a really good player as well, and I think he's. I don't know what you think. Is he inconsistent?
We need to move it on a second. Sorry, JK. I'm going to nail your colours to the mast. How's it? I mean, I have to be honest, mate. I never predict Chelsea are going to do anything other than win, so I would expect nothing less from you.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I wouldn't be surprised if we lose. We're still not quite, even though we won the last two games, we're still not quite where we were, even in the sort of restart period. So I still think we'll probably lose, but it'll be a narrow one, I think. And I mean, we'll score. So I think probably 2-1 would be my guess.
Okay, fair enough. Steve, wish you all the luck in the world with that tomorrow. And, you know, I'm sure none of my Southampton mates are listening to this because they would never admit to it anyway. But I do have a soft spot for Southampton, so I kind of wish you a bit of luck. But obviously, I hate that we win. Enjoy the rest of the season too. Hopefully, we'll get you back later on in the season as well. And finally, it's Total Saints podcast, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Available on all podcast platforms. And some rubbish ones as well. It's what I normally say about ours. But
yep,
Spotify, iTunes.
And on Patreon as well.
Oh, you're on Patreon. All right. Good, yeah. Good on you. All right, mate. Well, look, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you again
soon. Cheers for the invite.
Pleasure, mate. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers. Speak to you later. Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Right. So, there you go. So, actually, that's really interesting, chaps, because I didn't know they played 4-2-2-2. I thought, because we kind of did that the other week, I thought it was a made-up formation. But actually, hearing Steve talk about it, it kind of makes a bit of sense, Martin.
Yeah, I think, I'll be honest, I'm hardly the tactical guru here, but...
We know I'm not.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly fucking not on a Friday evening. But
Does that mean it's me?
Yeah, that's why you're here, you JK. You're here for technical input. You're our technical advisor, mate.
I asked quite an interesting question, didn't
you
I? Which he responded with the fact that it was 4-2-2-2. But yeah, when Frank plays Abraham and Werner, surely that's what it must be.
Yeah,
there must be two playing up there. Otherwise, you know,
that's a great segue, mate. How do you think? I mean, you know. I think it's confused by the fact, I mean, we have so many key issues about this match due to the injuries and stuff, and it's really hard to kind of separate them. So maybe I'll just leap into the key issues. You know, Kepa or Caballero, who partners Kante? That's a runner. And you know, I heard that Kante's carrying a knock. Who starts up front? Is it Werner or Abraham, or is it both? How does he fit both Havertz and Mountain? He's got Pulisic available, Ziyech possibly to come on. This is such a hard game to predict what the starting lineup's going to be, I think, JK.
Oh, completely. Completely. And, you know, and what happens to Giroud, of course, you know, it's one of his great games. He scores against some time, doesn't he?
Well, Martin, I know Martin was at that match because I remember getting quite pissed in the cock with him. Not the cock, the Giddy Bridge.
It was in the Giddy Bridge, weren't it?
Before, possibly afterwards too. But it was such... It was one of those great games, JK. You know, one of those games you go to, and that's why it's great, where you were absolutely shit-faced. It's a great away at Southampton, and we were abject beyond shit. And then Oli Giroud came on and just absolutely blew it away. He was brilliant, wasn't he, Martin?
Yeah, I mean, the transformation from first half to second was unbelievable. And then
the first goal was just wonderful, wasn't it, Martin? That first goal.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, there was no hope. And then got one back, then the second. What I remember from that second half was that Conte, rather than being on the touchline the whole time, just buggered off. Someone else was doing the coaching and organisation, and the comeback was on. And then a week later, we beat him at Wembley in the Cup semi-final when Giroud scored another belter.
Yeah, I remember that.
A little slalom through the penalty area.
So, okay, I mean, kind of like, as I said, we kind of turned it round on its head a bit. I mean, you know, Martin, Kepa or Caballero for you?
Caballero. Just because I think, I know what, I appreciate what Liam was saying about how much money they have invested in Kepa, but as far as I'm concerned, he's a busted flush now.
JK?
Yeah, I think it'll be the same. Yeah, Caballero. Yeah,
I think Frank will pick Kepa, actually.
I think he will, but I prefer he pick Caballero.
And so do I. I think this is beyond unfortunate. I'll be honest with you, chaps. My heart sank today. I mean, I knew Mendy wasn't going to be playing. That's bad enough. But then when I heard that Silva can't play because he's. I mean, this is the other thing that we were saying earlier on, Martin, about what is the point of international football. Silva's not injured. He's just knackered. It's ridiculous. Anyway, the fact that we've lost Mendy and Silva, which were, you know, our attempt to apply a band-aid to the defence, it really made my heart sink. So we, you know, let's be honest, Caballero's not the answer, even if Kepa certainly isn't. Well, so,
I think one of the problems, maybe, who plays centre-half?
Well, that's what I was getting to. I mean, you know, we know Silva. So, I mean, Rudiger had a shocker by all accounts for Germany. Yeah, because Martin and I didn't see it. So tell us more.
Well, just, you know, he's just completely unreliable.
Was it Scheisse?
Hey, well expressed.
Was it absolute Scheisse?
Complete Scheisse. Well, I don't understand how he got picked. I don't understand why he was selected for that game. And of course, except Werner scored a wonderful goal and was great. And so was Havertz. They were great. But, you know, but I didn't get that selection at all. No, he's clearly got the, you know, he's like a kind of just runs around slightly out of control. He's like he's like the other bunnies in the Duracell bunny ad. You know, he's the one who
the non Duracell bunny
who flails mad.
That's the one who blows out midway through.
Run out of juice. Exactly. He's that one. Yeah. So if he picks him, it'll be back to, who does he pick him with? Zouma? Does he pick? Is it going to be Zouma or Tomori? And Christensen played very well indeed for Denmark during the week. So
did he come off at half time? Was that planned, or did he have an?
No, he didn't. I didn't.
He was only playing England, to be fair, JK.
But I'm pretty sure he came off at half time, and I don't know whether that was an injury or because he got a yellow card in the first half. Well, I can't remember.
Who would you two pick in? I mean, you know, we know Aspi. I presume Aspi will start and Chilwell will start. So, given that, who is the central defensive pairing? Zouma and either Rudiger or Christensen?
Or Tomori.
So, who would it be for you?
I personally pick Tomori. But once again, we don't know what's been happening in training. So,
not a lot. Because Tomori wouldn't have been away with anybody, would he?
No, because he's England. He played for England, if you remember. So he wasn't picked for England. So he'd be.
He did make the squad then.
The England squad. Yeah. No. I'm saying he'd be training at.
So Frank would have. If you excuse the expression, Frank would have played with him all week.
All week.
Which might stand him in some good stead.
That's not rumours.
Well, I would be perfectly happy seeing Tomori play. I rate the kid. I really, really.
My pick is Zouma and Tomori. Well, that'd be my preferred back.
That would be mine.
That's assuming we play a back four. We could go to a back three.
So the other thing is, and I think there's a very interesting kind of theme developing going forward. You know, Kante obviously gets the central defensive midfielder role. But from what I've seen this season, I would happily put Jorginho in with teams, you know, that we would expect to beat. And I would be less inclined to do so against teams that we know we're going to have a game against. And I would put Southampton in the category of a team I would expect to beat. So I would have no problem with Jorginho starting. But I think the bigger issue, now we've got all the other players coming back, the Pulisic, you know, Ziyech won't start, we know that. But I still think he's got to somehow sort this Havertz and Mount issue out. And the issue being, how do you accommodate both of them? I mean, I know how I would do it. I would play 4-3-3 and I would have Kante, Havertz and Mount. But I'm not convinced, JK, that Frank's listening to me. More for him, I say.
Well, let's say who he's going to select. It's Ziyech is coming on eventually, isn't he? Is he going to play Werner in the middle, or does he play Abraham and put Werner on the left? But he's going to pick Werner and he's going to pick Havertz. So, but as you say, if Kante's injured, he'll...
Well, I think he'll be all right because he didn't say anything in the presser today. So I'm presuming he's okay. Right. So
you presume he's going to play. Well, then Jorginho won't get in, will he? It'll probably be Kovacic, I would suspect. It's just a permutation of who he drops, because Pulisic is back to form now. Well, not back to form, he's back to fitness. So if he plays Pulisic on the left, he plays Werner in the middle, and he plays Havertz. Will he play Hudson-Odoi then, I presume?
But that's...
Then will he?
Yeah, but that's you, I think, are, amazingly enough, agreeing with me. I mean, you know, I would have Kante, Havertz and Mount in midfield, and I would have Pulisic, Werner...
I'd have Mount. Yeah, no, I said Kovacic. I'd have. It wouldn't surprise me, though, if Mount played so well during the week, whether Mount played very well, both England games, he played very well, whether Mount doesn't make it in. I felt that the selection the other day, I thought was a bit dubious, but nonetheless, if the stars are there, is there a place for Mount? Does Mount come on as a sub? Does he come on as a super sub?
I mean, look, I'll nail my colours to the mast here. You know, we are a poorer side without Mason Mount, because I agree with you. Mason Mount, you know, he may not be Kai Havertz. Kai Havertz is clearly going to be a phenomenal footballer for this club, all things being equal. But Mason Mount brings something to that team that nobody else does. The energy, the dynamism, you know, he is essential to this team, and I think Lampard knows that. There has to be a way to accommodate him, and that's why I keep saying, Martin, it's got to be 4-3-3, and then, you know, you have your box-to-box midfielder, which I would say Mount is, you have your creative midfielder, which is Havertz, and you have your destroyer breaker up of play, which is Kante, and that allows you to play Pulisic, Werner, and I would imagine eventually Ziyech, but if he's not going to start on Saturday, then Hudson-Odoi as your front three. For me, that makes sense. But, you know, what do I know? I ain't got me UA for A or me UA for B.
I haven't even got them myself. But I just think that...
I've got a lovely pint of beer, though.
That's better.
That counts for something.
I think we seem to be at our best when we play with high energy.
Yeah.
And we don't dawdle. So I think we have to go with that. The only thing Frank may have to bear in mind, and I'm sure he is considering it, the Champions League starts next midweek. Well, so indeed, there is that to bear in mind. So, you know, people will get games. So I don't think people should be, you know, throwing their hands up in the air if in despair or whatever, if a certain player doesn't play. I know there's that weird anti-Mason Mount thing on social media. I know, but it has to be mentioned.
Why? Because it's irrelevant.
Because we have to know what the idiots in the world think, so we can tell them they're wrong.
I do prefer my Chelsea fancast and Chelsea friend silo, but I do know what you mean, Martin. But
yeah,
they have, sadly none of them are listening to this, but they have no relevance. They carry no weight. I mean, actually, do you know what the reality is? None of us do. You know, Frank doesn't listen to this bloody show, and he'd be an absolute fool if he did listen to what we had to say, in a sense. So it is all irrelevant. But, you know, I'm just going to throw one thing in here, actually, because it really picks up on what Steve was saying, JK. Given that they're going to play really narrow, and they're going to be, as our dear, horrible manager, Rafa, used to say, compact. They'll be compact. And, of course, the way that Spurs buried them was by just pinging balls over the top with Son racing onto them. I have a suspicion that this is a game where Jorginho might actually offer us something, because he does have that ability to ping a pass over the top for somebody like, you know, Werner or even Abraham or even Pulisic to run onto, and that could be useful.
But does he get in, though? I was about to say, what happens? Do Jorginho and Kovacic get in, or does he rest players for the Champions League game, or do they? What, you know? What's the structure?
Yeah, but I wouldn't pay Jorginho against Sevilla.
No, well, perhaps he gets in then and Mount doesn't. Perhaps Mount has a rest from playing all the time for England. Yeah. Perhaps he brings him on as a sub. Perhaps you know, I'm intrigued to see who he thinks should play around Kante, because Kante will obviously be first choice.
And how good was Kante in the last match?
Excellent. Fantastic.
Wasn't he? I mean, we said it afterwards, didn't we? He's getting back to his best, I think.
Yeah. So he becomes undroppable. But then who do you fit with him? This is the dilemma. I mean, we tried to work out what would be the best team, and we presumed it would be all the signings, but perhaps it's not.
I think the really interesting thing about this is that, I mean, look, you know, if you talk to any current pro or former pro, that they will say to you, you know, system schmistems, it's about players.
And Kerry
would be far more rude about it than I'm being. But, you know, he certainly says that. But I mean, your modern players will say something similar. They will say, well, you know, it's not that rigid. You know, we might start 4-3-3, but we'll change to 4-2-3-1 or whatever. You know, they change systems during the game depending on the situation. So I think maybe it's a bit spurious of us to sit going, oh, he's got to play 4-3-3. But what I do think is interesting is that, you know, last season, that's how he wanted to play. He started off playing 4-3-3 and it didn't work. And then we went to three at the back, didn't we, occasionally? So I'm really surprised that he's kind of gone to this 4-2-3-1 idea. I just don't understand that. You know, well,
I think it's something to do with that he's got this defensive guy in. I wonder whether it works better if defensively the ball isn't pinged out. If it's actually there's a bit more thought about the marking or a bit more thought about.
Well, it's the double pivot, isn't it? As those Wallies on Twitter like to call it. You know, you've got, you know, basically Kante and Jorginho kind of switching.
Yeah,
you know, and so it kind of gives you a bit more defensive solidity, I suppose. But I mean,
perhaps it slows it down. You can't then ping the ball forward in the way that he was doing at the beginning of the season.
I think the other thing is that the issues we had defensively were set pieces and getting done on the counter. So if this is a way to, you know, work on that, I think we'd looked a little bit better against Palace, although I thought they were, I was surprised how weak they were. But if they think going 4-2-3-1 allows them to prevent overcommitting up front and not getting caught like that, then it can work in the it can only work in the long term. But in the short term, it does look a little bit staid in comparison to some of the stuff we saw this time last season.
Well, you know what? Bring back total football. That's what I say. I want to see Mendy or Kepa or Cabio hairing up on a dribble and putting it in the back of the net. You know, let's go Dutch. I'll tell you what I do think about tomorrow, and I think, you know, and I think in a sense this is what works so well against Palace, but I think we need to score first. I do think an early goal, as always, really, really helps, because, you see, I think Steve was right. Southampton are going to come with a game plan, which is to not concede, keep it tight, be compact and hit us on the break and try and steal something. So if we get a goal up, it's going to change the game dramatically. And I also think it will give the lads some confidence, which I still think they need, because I still think that we're a long way from the finished article. And I still think it's very, very early days in terms of this season, in terms of them all gelling together. So a quick goal will help. Would you agree with that, JK?
Well, I think a quick goal always helps, doesn't it? I mean, well, having said that, I think several times last season we scored a quick goal and then fell apart. So, I don't know. I don't think they're as good a side as us. I think they're very well organised, and we haven't in the past been terribly good at breaking down teams, who, as we know, who set up these two banks of four. But I felt that there were better signs of it happening in the Palace game, because they attempted to defend, and I think. It'll be very interesting to see if Havertz comes into his own in this game, and I suspect he might actually. I think they have better keys for unlocking rigid defences than they've had over the last few years, because they really are rather special, Werner and Havertz. And it will be about time that Werner scores the kind of goal he scored for Germany during the week,
yeah,
which was absolutely terrific.
I think the other thing is, you know, Steve was saying that Saints play really narrow, which means, you know, which means they basically crowd the middle of the pitch. But that means we need to get some width. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if James starts instead of Aspie, actually, having said that Aspie's nailed on to start. But, you know, James and Chilwell hairing down the wing in support and, you know, basically us getting wide and putting really good delivery in might be quite a useful ploy, Martin.
Yeah, and I was about to say Werner playing out a bit wider as well, because you can use his speed to stretch that defence a little bit more. I'm sure if they do play as narrow as Steve was saying, then he may get a lot more open space on that side, especially if we turn the ball over quickly and can break on them when they're not as compact as they would like to be.
All right, nail your colours to the mast, gents. Martin?
2-1, Chelsea.
JK?
2-1, Chelsea.
Right, well, I cannot tell a lie, as George Washington once said. I have already predicted 3-1 in my Prem predictions, so I'm going to stick with that. And actually, talking of Prem predictions, anybody listening tonight who is in our Prem Predictions League, make sure you get your picks in before kick-off tomorrow. I think it's the first game, it's the Everton-Liverpool game, so make sure you get them in before that. Joe Mingola, I should thank him again for... you know, being the manager of the month. He needs all the credit for this. He was the manager for the month of September, but because he lived in the States, I got the bottle of whiskey. It does not seem fair at all, does it?
So you're not complaining, though, are you?
I'm not complaining at all. There's a very...
It's a lovely picture, Chidge.
Is it?
It's a very good picture of you with the bottle. Yeah, you look as if you're advertising it.
So the bottle's full then?
Do you know what? I looked at it afterwards. I thought of you and I thought Jonathan will be so cross with me because I didn't have the full front of the bottle. I had it slightly turned, you know.
Yeah, but it looked real. But yeah, you should have held it slightly in it with your four fingers so you didn't put your hand over the table. Yeah,
but you see, the thing is, I had to get my missus to take it, and she was very grumpy. She'd just woken up, and she was on her way out to see the dentist. So I was lucky to get somebody to take a photograph of me at all. So
she did quite well, considering. Yeah.
Posing with a bottle of whiskey in the morning.
Yeah, context is everything, Martin.
Yeah, I think. Well, thinking of what you were talking about, how you should hold it. If it had been me, it would have been like that angle and with the neck open and the
Eric Morecambe poise. Yeah, indeed.
More like the bloody Jockey Wilson poise.
That too, boys. It's been great doing another preview show. I do enjoy doing these. Lovely to hear from Liam earlier on and Steve Grant from Total Saints Podcast. Good luck, everybody, in your Prem predictions tomorrow. Jonathan and I, and Martin's actually whipping our arse. I think Martin's doing best out of all the Fancast mob, from what I recall.
I've got to say, I had one good week and the next three were absolutely shit. I've been doing the scores to reflect normal football, so all this 7-2 and 6-1 nonsense is kicking my ass quite badly.
I got so many minus points for that bloody 7-2. Jonathan and I are doing appallingly. We really need to up our game, but good luck to everybody playing the Prem predictions, and thank you everybody for listening. We will be back on Monday night. I can't for the life of me remember who's going to be on with me and Jonathan. I think Dan put his hand up first, so I know Dan's on. And I can't remember. Oh, Tony. Tony's with us as well. So there we go. We'll have Tony and Dan on with us on Monday. And we'll be talking all about the Southampton game, obviously. And, of course, we'll be looking ahead to the Sevilla game, which is on the Tuesday. Champions League football is back. How exciting. I'm feeling quite moist about that. Anyway, enough of my personal hygiene. Right, we will be back on Monday. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening. Up the Chelsea! It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.